Welcome. Jump into the Compassionate Leader Circle podcast, where leading with love isn't just nice, it's genius. I'm Laurel Donnellan.
And I'm Daryl Brown. We'll unpack business strategies infused with empathy and action, driving both profit and purpose. Our world is ever-changing, so discover how the savvy leader wears compassion as their power suit.
Francesca Reichter, I am so happy to have you here at the Compassionate Leader Circle podcast. I'm excited to talk to you about you and your organization and your story. For our listeners, I want you to know that we're using the theme of courage for the month of January. Courage is the first part of the 12-part Donnellan Method that's a foundation of a lot of our programs. Francesca is the most courageous person I've met in the last year. And I'm really honored to have her. I'm going to tell you a little bit about her. She is one of the honorees that we had at the Compassionate Leader Circle Awards last year. She was in very good company with an amazing group. But let me tell you about her. This is how we introduced her at the awards. She is the founder of Inspiring My Generation, an organization dedicated to reducing the suicide rate through mental health awareness, conversation, education, and compassionate support. As a suicide attempt survivor, Francesca uses her story to help others feel less alone and encourage open discussions. She embodies compassion and kindness by showing up for those who feel invisible. She is a brave pioneer striving to normalize the courageous conversations we all need to have about mental well-being. Francesca hosts the podcast Normalize the Conversation and has authored 6 interactive workbooks. Is it still 6 or have you done more since then?
The 7th comes out in May.
Excellent. So 7. So welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me and for that amazing introduction.
Well, and it's all true. It's all you. I think the last time I introduced you, I broke down in tears introducing you. So I feel proud that I got through the introduction today without tears. So let's start with your story and how mental health and teenagers and young people is a topic near and dear to my heart. And it's something that we want to support as an organization. And I think it really starts with you and your story. So why don't we start there?
Yeah, my story begins. I was 5 years old. I was a competitive cheerleader. Back then, they put us in those tiny uniforms and made us step on a scale at tryouts to see if we were small enough to be a flyer, really comparing us and making us up against each other as young girls. And my older sister made a comment about my body and my uniform, as older sisters like to tease their younger sisters. And what she didn't realize is I became so afraid of growing, right? I became so afraid of my body changing, of the number on the scale going up a little bit, that I wouldn't be a flyer anymore, that I didn't have a chance to be in the front anymore. Right? Like all these small things, I was constantly comparing myself up against every other girl on the team, every other 5-year-old, 6-year-old, 7-year-old. And then that translated outside of cheerleading into school, right? If anyone did better than me on a test, if I wasn't perfect, I had all of this like fear inside of me. I didn't really have the language for it. So I would just break down all the time. And people would say, as we say to kids when they cry, grow up, get over it. Big girls don't cry. And I love that song. I hate that saying because I didn't know where I was crying. I was just so overwhelmed and I was so terrified. There were so many thoughts going through my brain and I couldn't make sense of them. I couldn't vocalize them. And instead of anyone ever asking me, are you okay? How are you feeling? What's going on? They just said, get over it. So by the time I was 12 years old, I remember lying under my bed and I had this notebook, and on one side, it was on the back page, I wrote down my will, and it was like, give my toys to my brother and my electronics to my sister. And on the other side, I wrote down a quote that I really liked, and then I rewrote it to make it make sense to me. So I think it was, say what you mean what you say, because when tomorrow comes, it won't matter what you say, but what you've said. Because people were just saying so many mean things to me all the time. And I felt like I just needed someone to say something kind. I needed someone to actually make me feel like I mattered, because I felt like I didn't at that point. So I really started to like to write. And my dad had told me about WordPress and blogging. So we signed me up for a WordPress account and started a blog called it Inspiring My Generation, because I was going to inspire my generation, my friends, to maybe talk about what they were feeling, or to be kind, or to be a leader, to be someone who wanted to make the world a happier place or a better place. So I'd go online every day after school, and I would put up a quote. I would rewrite a quote that I liked, that I heard. And then eventually lessons I was learning, things that would just inspire me, like an eraser, right? You can make a mistake. It's okay. Right? You can rewrite. Things can change. Things can get better. So I would just start to create all these lessons and try to find meaning, try to find purpose. And I realized I wanted to do that. So it was back then I decided I was going to be like the next Oprah Winfrey. But what happens in middle school when you do something different? People started teasing me and bullying me. So then I said, well, maybe you're not hearing me. So I loved Oprah. So I was like, I'm going to start a podcast. It was Blog Talk Radio back then. So I would go live on Sundays at 4 p.m. And
How old were you, Francesca, when you did that?
15. And I'd go live Sundays at 4 p.m. You could call into my show and talk about things that were important to me, like the way you talk, what you say to people, how you show up, being really present with the people around you. Just these things that were so important to me, because I felt like I was so alone in the world. I felt like no one was speaking to me with kindness. So I just tried to create these conversations. And in high school, when you do something different, people really tease you and bully you. So eventually I started to shut down. And then my parents were separating, and a place that home was my safety, right? Suddenly that didn't exist anymore. And I just went quiet. And I was like, okay, I just have to graduate, get to college. College is going to be the best 4 years of your life. That's what they say. And then I heard someone do college in 3 years, decided I was going to do it in 2.5 to prove I was good enough. But I didn't sleep. I didn't eat. I didn't take care of myself. I worked 50 hours a week. I just was trying so hard to be perfect and be everything and get through it fast so that life would suddenly work out and be perfect and I'd feel better. But I was draining myself, and I had no idea, because no one ever talked to me about taking care of yourself. No one ever talked to me about prioritizing yourself, your mental health. So I was slowly hurting myself without ever knowing it. So I ended up getting ready to graduate, and I thought life was going to work out. I was so lucky because my grandparents, my grandfather, he would FaceTime me every morning for a cup of coffee. Every day after class, I would call him, FaceTime him. And he retired as a barber, so whoever was in his barbershop chair would have to hear about the cute boy who like sat next to me, or the teacher who gave us a pop quiz and just had to listen to me vent or get really excited about something. And then every night for dinner, as I was walking into my shift at Build-A-Bear, and he just made me feel so loved and important. And then my grandmother, if I wasn't on the phone with him, I was probably on the phone with her. She would stay up all night listening to me cry about finance formulas, and she had no idea what I was talking about, but she would stay on FaceTime with me till 3 a.m. if that's what I needed. So I was so lucky I had them. But I'm getting ready to graduate. My week of my final exams, my grandparents get into a car accident. I lose my grandfather, almost lose my grandmother, and my heart just shatters. My whole support system, the people I really depended on, suddenly my grandfather wasn't there anymore, and I didn't know how to get through a morning without him, let alone a lifetime. And everything I ever was feeling and stuffing down suddenly came to the surface. I skipped my final exams, slept in a hospital chair next to my grandmother. but didn't really sleep. I didn't take care of myself at all. I was just trying to like be there for her, go to her physical therapy and cheer her on. She was learning to like walk again and stand again. And eventually Christmas rolled around, and a day that we spent so much time together, it hit me like I was never gonna have that again. I attempted to end my life for the first time. My uncle helped me through it. 27 days later, I lost him to suicide. My heart really shattered because the person who talked to me, who sat with me, who talked to me about therapy, about medication, about nutrition, about exercise, about supplements, about all these different things that could play a role in how you're feeling, and that there was support available. The person who actually normalized the conversation on mental health for me knew what I was feeling, and that's why he could have that conversation. And he saved me, but I didn't save him. I ended up attempting two more times, hospitalized in a psych unit, where for the first time, I saw that other people were also struggling. It wasn't all in my head like everyone had made me feel. Suddenly, it wasn't just like grow up, get over it. It was, wow, this other people are feeling this way too. And there's tools. Maybe there's something we can do. Maybe it actually can get better. So while I was in there, I made a point to learn everyone's name and everyone's story. And I decided I was going to Inspiring My Generation, that blog I had done when I was 12, that blog talk radio podcast when I was 15, it was going to be something more. So I spent a year doing any type of therapy possible and creating resources for myself. I created cards for myself and just the messages I wish people were saying to me.
So before we go forward with what you did after that, I have some questions. I also identify a lot with your story. I have never attempted suicide, but I had a severe eating disorder, and I was an overachiever like you. I was a cheerleader like you. I was a workaholic like you. So I feel like I'm talking to my sister here. So my first question is, what would you tell adults and siblings and older people about what is appropriate to say to a 5-year-old girl about their body and what is not?
And I think one of the most important things is really just modeling like a healthy relationship with your body, right? That was never modeled to me. It was the movies and the shows that I was watching, right? It was comments about your body. It was people standing in the mirror and looking at their bodies and what was wrong with their bodies and comments, right? People making fun of other people for the way they looked. So paying attention really to content you're allowing your kid to consume at a young age. And then also how you're right modeling that behavior. Are you commenting about yourself saying, I am ugly for this reason, I'm bad for this reason, right? Not eating, skipping your meals in front of your kid, right? Just those small things are so subtle that your kids pick up on. So I think that's a very important piece, what we're not saying, but what we're actively showing them. And then also, I'd say talk to them about like it's normalized growing, right? Maybe when they go and you're getting new clothes, not making it a negative thing, like, oh, you outgrew your clothes again. Now I have to go buy new clothes. You know, making it like you're growing. That's so exciting. Like you're becoming older. Growing up, you have so many life experiences ahead of you. Make it a good thing, not a negative experience for growing, for your body changing. Because that really matters at a young age, that it's not bad to grow. It's not bad for your body to change, for your size to go up. That's a very important piece that we often miss.
I feel like every sentence you're saying could be a book, Francesca. There's so much wisdom here, and thank you for that. And what do you, as you reflect back to that cheerleading culture, I mean, is five too early to be a cheerleader and be squeezed into a uniform? Like, what are your thoughts about that?
Well, you know, as I got older, I think it was when I was probably about 15, they changed it that the younger kids, up until you're on a senior team, so I think you have to be 10 or 12, your stomach is covered. You're in a full uniform. Back in when I was younger, our uniforms were really tiny, we were barely covered. So they changed like the way uniforms are, which I think is really great. We could maybe make them a little longer. I think that would be very helpful. But I do like that there became a shift in let's cover kids' bodies more instead of creating that comparison game at such a young age, and also just allowing kids to be kids and not have them walk around undressed.
I am observing also more acceptance of background singers for pop stars being different sizes and shapes, and having that filter into local, cheerleading squads and, all sorts of stuff. I think it's also kids and humans have different body types, right? And we should honor that and not make them feel like they all have to be the same.
Yes, I remember one time because our practice uniforms were like sports bras and sliders, and I would always put a t-shirt on. I was maybe 13, 14, and my coach yelling at me, a grown man, that I had to take off my shirt, and I was not comfortable taking off my shirt for practice. And got into like a screaming match in the middle of a cheer gym. Not a single adult in that gym advocating for the child who wanted to be covered, making me feel uncomfortable. And then the one time that I was rewarded, right, the people were nice, was like, oh, looks like you lost weight. Very like positive anytime after that. But otherwise, it was like, maybe you need to go up a size with a comment and like a, it's like you're making me so uncomfortable. I want to be covered because it's all grown men and I feel uncomfortable making me take off my shirt. Now you're commenting on my body and now you're celebrating me when I lose weight. So you're making me feel even more self-conscious. And I don't even feel like I can be present and enjoy the sport that I love. I'm now terrified to just be in my uniform, to show up to practice, to feel comfortable and safe and happy in a space that used to make me feel so good, used to be an outlet to tumble, to get my stress and frustration out, to really be happy. It's like they took that away from me by making comments about how I looked from the age of five all the way through.
Well, I'm sorry that happened to you, and my prayer is it happens less. And unfortunately, I think it's still happening. And I hope our listeners are listening very carefully to you about the repercussions from that experience. The other thing I want to ask you about is I am not a mom, but I'm an aunt. And very early on in my aunt, my favorite role in the world is being an aunt. And I take it very seriously. I've been concerned about the mental health of teenagers because I had a rough time with my mental health as a teenager and young woman through my 20s and still work very hard on therapy and all those things. But one of the things I read was there was a study about what states in the US had the lowest suicide rates and what states had the highest. And the only thing they could correlate was states where at that time there was less transients coming from other states and more of a established family. Kids that had grandparents, uncles, and adults in their life that weren't their parents that supported them had a lower suicide rate than kids that were, in a new state with not an extended family or extended support group. So I think your story speaks so much to how an extended family is important. And when you lost your extended family all at once, and I'm so sorry in many ways. So what do you think about that theory, about the idea of helping young people find other adults that they can talk to?
Yeah, having trusted adults is so important. Having a community that makes you feel safe, whether it is directly family members or a lot of just trusted adults around you, by having that support system is so important. It can be chosen family or your family. Really having that support system, that community makes such a difference because you have someone to reach out to. So you're not alone. And I recently moved across the country. And that was one of the hardest things is learning how to build that community. But it makes such a difference when you have people around you that you can reach out to, that can really be there and sit with you in that darkness, but also celebrate you and with you in the light, that can be there for both pieces because they're equally important. Just having that makes such a difference.
So let's come back to your story. So you're in a hospital and you decide you're going to learn everyone's name and help everyone else is there. And I'm curious about what happens next and how you get to your organization and what your organization does.
Yeah. So while we were in the psych unit, we had like these little group activities. And one of my favorites was art therapy, where really it was a table, like a bunch of tables with different like art supplies on them. And I was at a table with two other young girls, and we were coloring, and we were just coloring like messages and stuff. And it was kind of fun. So when I got out of the psych unit, I started coloring these kinds of messages for myself with the words I needed to hear and things that I wish people were saying to me. I wish instead of saying, get over it, someone said, you can handle this. Instead of saying, you'll be fine, you're going to get through this. Right? You're an adult. You'll figure it out. You're not alone. Just these small things that I wish people were saying instead. So I started making those cards and messages for myself, putting my favorite quotes and poems in them. And one day I had 100 cards in front of me, and I thought it would have been so cool if we had received them back then. So I sent them to the psych unit I was in, and now we've done 30,000 handmade cards to patients in psych units between Florida, Indiana, California, and Michigan. And then I realized my parents and I didn't know how to have a conversation because no one ever prepared them for the moment your kid looks at you and says, I don't want to be alive anymore. No one prepared them for the moment they were going to have to walk into a psych unit and see their child after she tried to end their life. That's terrifying for them. And for my parents, they've reacted out of fear. Right? Because they were so afraid to lose their child. It wasn't that they didn't love me. It was that they were so afraid. They didn't know what to say. And when they were so afraid, a lot of times it came out in more of an anger than in a compassion. So I created a guide so that they could talk to me. And I was like, stick to the script. And I still, to this day, they have the workbooks. So I'm like, script. It's non-judgmental, open-ended questions and validation statements, supportive statements, understanding statements, how to actively listen. Like I gave them a step-by-step guide on how to talk to me.
That's fascinating. And did you call it Stick to the Script? Because that's a really good title.
I should have. I just called it my brand's conversation guide. I should have called it Stick to the Script. But I started making these worksheets then for myself. Like, how do I figure out coping skills? Because although we had these group activities in the psych unit, no one linked it from when you feel this way, here's something you can do to help you. It was just like, here's activities. So I started trying to create these gaps. I tried to fill these gaps for myself. And I had all these worksheets in front of me. And I was making coloring pages for myself for the days I didn't feel like making a card. I had a coloring page I could do. And then I turned it into a workbook, and I was like, it would be a great guide for someone else who doesn't know what to do. And then now I have seven workbooks. So really just trying to take what I needed at the time and create something with it. And then how can I offer it to other people? The podcast came from sitting there and wishing that I was having conversations, wishing I learned information earlier. And I still had this idea in my head that I was going to be the next Oprah Winfrey. So I reached out to someone on Instagram who was like, do you want to go live with me and have a conversation? They said yes, and someone else wanted to do it. And next thing you knew, I was doing an episode every week. So it was just creating these things that I needed. I needed someone to talk to me. The first one was on myths of eating disorders, because that was a really big thing I was living with in the psych unit. I was eating a salad 3 meals a day, and it was just lettuce and a little bit of dressing. I think it was like a lemon wedge that I actually would put on it. And then 2 oranges. That's all I ate in the psych unit for an entire week. Right, so I needed to have these conversations. I need other people to understand what I was going through. Right, anxiety in the holidays, I believe, was the second episode. So just all these pieces that I needed, I started creating, and then got to share it with other people, and it became like my survival guide. It became other people's survival guides too, which is pretty cool.
And just for our listeners and for me, how old are you now?
27.
27. So since that time where you were writing yourself card, you were writing cards as a therapeutic process, and now having an organization, it's been 5 years. Is that the timeline?
It's been almost 6 years.
Six
Yeah,
years.
2020.
Yeah. And how have you been personally in that period of time?
I've had ups and downs, and I think that's what I love so much about my journey, is that I've had moments where everything feels so great, and then I've had moments where I feel like I'm falling apart and it feels like the world is ending. But I actually have tools now that I never had. I know how to ask for help, which I never knew before. So even when it feels like the darkness isn't going to go away, I know how to find little pieces of light to hold on to until tomorrow. And it's made such a difference.
And how has helping other people helped you?
It gives me a meaning, right? It gives me a sense of purpose. So in the moments where it feels like there's nothing, where the world feels so hopeless, I get to give hope. I get to find a piece of hope and give it to other people. And it feels good. It feels good to get to be that piece of hope. Every time I make a card, that's usually what I do when I'm feeling really down, is I make cards. So I want to say like last week I made 170 cards. I was having a bad week. And I imagine who will receive the card. So in my head, before I make the card, I create a person. I totally make up a whole story for them. And I just think about how their face will light up the moment that it'll create for them. Like that feeling, that hug in the form of paper. And it really just helps me want to hold on and continue to give that to other people. So it gives me a reason to stay.
So, have you handmade 30,000 cards, or do you get help?
I get help. People volunteer from around the world. I've had people from the Netherlands and Canada send in
Oh,
cards,
good, good.
schools, libraries, organizations.
But you made 170 last week, and what was going on last week for you that made it a hard week?
I know it was the start of a new year. And I think that time, everyone's coming up with these really big, like New Year's resolutions. And everyone's going to these big parties and having all these people around them. And I didn't have a New Year's Eve party to go to, I didn't get an invite. And I felt really alone. I was in California, my family's in Florida. I had to come back for a doctor appointment. I also volunteer on Mondays, so I'd love to be back in California on Mondays. And I kind of felt so alone. And I feel like the year was ending in a way that made me feel sad. I couldn't come up with this resolution that I wanted to work toward because I like what I'm doing. I love the way things are right now. I don't have something I want to change. And I just felt so almost like I didn't fit in, like I didn't belong. And I just needed something to make me feel like I had a purpose. But it was so hard because it felt like everyone else had these really big lives and exciting lives last week. And I was like sitting on the couch reading.
I think New Year's Eve is one of the more overhyped holidays that we have, and there's so many movies about people falling in love on New Year's, and there's this all this pressure. And I gave up drinking 34 years ago, But when I drank, New Year's was my favorite holiday, but I didn't really remember them. But now that I'm sober, Thanksgiving is my favorite holiday because it's all about food and family and gratitude. And then Christmas, there's too much hype for that. And then New Year's, I usually am asleep before midnight. So I think we put a lot of pressure on New Year's, but I do love the ritual of resetting and making plans and having more hope. So what is your vision or hope for the future of you, of your life and your organization with no New Year's pressure, just any ideas you have for what how you'd like to grow?
On the personal side, the workbook's curriculum. I want to see mental health curriculum in our schools. I want to develop K through 12 curriculum where every year kids are getting a new skill, a new tool, whether it's through the kids' book, learning self-love, learning how to give yourself kind words and compassion, or whether it's as a teenager learning how to set goals that last. Set boundaries, right? Thought reframing, reach out for support. So really create those tools and those guides so you have it before you need them. In addition to that, on the nonprofit side, I want to see encouragement cards at every single hospital. I want any single person who goes into a psych unit to know that someone out there sees them. Podcast, one day, I still think I'm going to be Oprah. I'm going to be on talk show. We're going to be over gave out cars. We're going to give out free therapy. So catch me with the talk show one day. And then I would love to create, I always love the kind of St. Jude model, Ronald McDonald House. And I want to create a foundation-funded behavioral health facility where we actually are able to help people and look at all different aspects, right? Because so often we assume what's causing something. We don't often check, our vitamin levels, our hormone levels. Those are very important pieces of how we're feeling, as well as our environment and talking about our mental health, different types of therapy modalities, because what works for one person might not work for the other person. Different holistic methods being available, different types of medications, and really helping people find what works for them, but not being a one type only approach, a real comprehensive approach that works for people. And being able to supplement families' income so families can be part of it as well, if they want to be, and if the person wants them to be. Because a lot of times family members don't know what to say or what to do. So how can we help create a more supportive environment? So that's like my ultimate life goal is that foundation-funded behavioral health facility. So those are the features and the goals.
That's amazing. I feel like you have so much to give. I totally see you having a talk show, and we need a new Oprah. So you could be the new Oprah. We need you.
I
I think so. I would love to hear from you because you are, connected to young people, connected to people struggling. Two things. What would you say to someone who might be listening right now, who might be feeling hopeless and sad and don't want to be here anymore? What would you say to them?
I'd say your story matters. I think that was a big thing for me. I felt like I didn't have a voice. I felt like I didn't matter. And when I learned that I had a voice, everything changed. So your voice matters. Your story matters. You matter. Right? Don't be afraid to reach out for support. Don't be afraid to take up space to ask for what you need because every piece of you deserves to be seen. You deserve to be heard. You deserve to have support. So do not be afraid to use your voice and ask again to seek what you need, to look for resources if the people around you aren't helping you. Do not give up because you feel like you've been silenced. That was one of the hardest lessons I had to learn, is that I had a voice and I was able to use it. You matter, your story matters. Don't give up hope in that.
Beautiful. And what would you say to people? I think all of us, whether we're an aunt or a parent or a friend, or, a student at college. I think if everyone sat for a minute, they might be able to conjure up someone they know that is struggling, right? They might be just someone who's maybe at school and is it used to be very social and is now isolating, or it could be a relative that you know is depressed, or it could be someone struggling with addiction. What's the advice you would give to someone who loves someone that's struggling? What would you say to them?
One, as the person, if you want to offer support to that person, one of the most important things I would ask you to do is to ask, how are you really, with intention, and be willing to listen and sit there through that answer and hold space and just be there. That's a great way to show support and show up for someone, because so many people just feel so alone in it and wish they had someone to talk to. So creating space for someone to feel seen and heard. And on the other side of that, because it can feel so hard to hear about a loved one struggling, because you can't fix it for them, right? You can't do the work for someone else. You can only be there alongside. Take care of yourself. Check in with yourself. Ask yourself, how are you really? Listen to what you need. If you need rest, if you need to go for a walk or get outside, whatever it is that you need also matters. So checking in with them and checking in with you and holding space for you, because both of you are very important as well.
I think you have all the answers to all of our hardest questions, Francesca. I think you're brilliant. So, how are you really? And how am I really? Are really good questions to ask our, others and ourselves. Beautiful. So, with all of our guests, I always ask them to leave us. You've left us with so much wisdom today, but what is one life lesson you would offer our listeners, and what is one leadership lesson you would offer them?
Oh, that's really good. So, one life lesson is, for me, one of the hardest things I've learned is it's okay to celebrate yourself. Right? I love to, on the days that the anniversaries that I had attempted suicide, I survived. I love to have like a cupcake at midnight or a piece of cake. I survived. And for so long, I would ask people, like, will you have a cupcake with me? Like, will you celebrate it with me? And people would say no. And I was like, so sad about that. And I was like, I have no one to celebrate it with. No one cares. You can celebrate yourself. You can honor yourself. You can show up and have compassion and love yourself. You don't need anyone else to be able to do that. You don't need someone else's permission. You don't need someone else to be there. You can celebrate yourself. We're kind of taught that to have a party, you need to have a bunch of people around you. No, throw on some music. Be there with yourself, for yourself, because you matter and you are the only person who wants to show up for you. So that's the life advice that I've learned that's really changed a lot for me. And then leadership advice, start with why. That's like the biggest thing for me, is I always come back to, why is this important to me? Who do I want to be? What made me get started? And for me, it's that 12-year-old version of me, right? I just needed someone. How can I be that person? Going back to why. We get so disconnected from why we started, from who we are. And if we can line up with our values, line up with the version of us that wanted to do this, we will always lead with compassion, with kindness, and with love. And I think that's what we should do as leaders.
Beautiful. And to wrap up I think we could have a whole nother podcast about courage, but where does your courage come from? Like, do you think about that? Like, I feel like you've done, even as a little girl, you did things that were very courageous. Where do you think that comes from? Where's the source?
When I think about it, I never thought about what it would be like to not do it. right? That was never an option. There was never an option to not be that person I needed, because I had to be. And then I got to see that I could be that for someone else. And that was really cool, because I was so happy that I got to be that for me when I learned how. So it was never an option to not be that for me. And then when I saw that I could do that for someone else, that was amazing. So me, I guess, was where that courage came from. Child me.
Yeah, beautiful. I think if we can follow our own advice that we give other people, I mean, I think we have to be in integrity, right? So if we're encouraging other people to be courageous or to ask how they are really, we have to do that for ourselves, right? We have to, if we're going to be in integrity, we have to do what we say, tell others to do. And so it's, for me, sometimes it's easier to give other people advice and then I have to follow my own advice. But I will tell our listeners, like, I'm going to encourage you to take this conversation and take it in and do something brave. Just do something brave. And it needs to just be brave for you. And don't overthink it. Like, I love that Francesca didn't really feel like she had a choice. if you want to build courage muscles, be courageous and don't overthink it. So how can all of us support you and your organization and help fund all these amazing things that you do? How can we get in touch?
Yeah, you can go to inspiringmygeneration.org, or you can email me, Francesca@inspiringmygeneration.org.
Thank you for being with me today. It was a wonderful conversation and you healed me. So thank you for being my new Oprah.
I really appreciate you and the space that you're creating.
It's my pleasure. And that's a heart-wrapped episode of the Compassionate Leader Circle podcast. May your compass always point to kindness.
As you navigate the world, let compassion be your North Star. Join us next time as we continue to redefine success one heart-led decision at a time.
Lead wisely, lead with heart. You can learn more about us at CompassionateLeadersCircle.com.